welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the Mac show from the Bagel Tech Network, and we've got a fantastic panel to start us off. I'm Ewan Rankin, and rejoining us from a very long break, Mr. Don McAllister.
It wasn't that long.
You're back, dude. We thought we'd lost you.
No, it was only 2 weeks, wasn't it? Yeah, I was off swanning about.
Recall the search party, mate. How was Blog World?
It was good. It's good to be back. A bit cold in Los Angeles, though. We were quite surprised.
Yeah, only 60 degrees, maybe.
And it was raining as well for some days.
Oh!
It spoiled some of our plans after the conference had finished, but never mind.
Did you get your money back?
I like to see all the gang. I like to hang out with all the Mac podcasters that end up over there as well. It's good.
Good man. Did you tell them to tune in?
Of course.
Is that why we're riding high in iTunes at the moment? Thank you.
And I had my interview with Callie Lewis as well, but not in bed this time. That's a different story.
Is this your annual event? You take Callie to Lewis to bed once a year?
Oh, no.
Well, I'd be happy. That'd be fine, mate.
It's just unfortunate that if you search for Screencast Online on YouTube, that's the top hit that comes out every time.
Quite right. Well, I wouldn't stop it either. Let's do a quick straw poll of the panel here. Hands up, who's been in bed with Callie Lewis? Don, put your hand up, dude. Put your hand up.
Well, on the bed.
There you go.
It's on the bed. Let's be accurate about this.
Was the wife there as well? Oh.
No, she didn't come with me on that trip.
Oh! Next to Don, we've got our usual man from the Philippines, our musician extraordinaire, Carl Swagger. Hello, mate.
Musician?
Well, you play the guitar, don't you? You're the hands up if you've recorded an album that's been commercially sold. None of us, just three. You. See, there we go. Three, it's not as cool as sleeping with Callie. Oh, sorry, being in bed with Callie Lewis, but...
How you doing?
I'm good, pal. You?
I'm good.
Stinking hot day in the Philippines?
No, it's not. Well, it's not now because of the air conditioner. It's actually been a little hot this week, though. We're supposed to be in the cooler months now, and it ain't happening. It's like the world is coming to an end.
And your side of the world is gripped with the Pan-Asian Games, I believe.
The Southeastern Asian Games. I think they're about to wrap up, actually.
Normally, you're gripped with pandemic flu, but so it must be
no,
nice.
Not this year. No, we got the games this year.
Yeah, jolly good. Beneath him, stepping in at the last minute, thank you ever so much, mate, is not Joe DeMax, but it's Alex G. Fox.
I'm Alex DeMax.
Alex, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, it's very good. I'm finding it really hard to concentrate after you talked about Callie Lewis.
Sorry, mate. She does have that effect. And I gather, which is even worse, she's apparently really nice.
Just stop it now, will you?
And last but by no means least, the man that we've got on, and it's not really at the last minute, but it kind of has been, because we planned to have you on here for a while, Paul, but it just kind of all happened close to the end, didn't it? Paul Kent from Macworld iWorld.
Oh, how's it going, guys?
It's all right, mate. It's all right. So, what's changed with Macworld now, then?
Oh gosh, this is a really incredible year. We call it the biggest evolutionary year for Macworld in the 28 years we've been doing it. We changed the name of it to Macworld iWorld to better represent all the kind of. It's really what's been going on the show floor for several years. All the iPod, iPad, iPhone stuff. We just wanted to have a brand that really accurately depicts what we do at the show. And then the whole show is different. I mean, in addition to an exhibit floor and a conference, we've got all these musical performances. We've got a film festival. We've got art galleries. It's really a very different type of event this year.
I've got to say, I've never been to Macworld, and I really, really want to go. And now I really want to bring the show out and do the show from the Macworld floor. That would be super cool.
You got to come. There's going to be so many cool people. A lot of musicians are going to be participating. Like I said, a whole film festival. We got the guys from South Park Studios coming up to talk about. They're the largest TV animation studio. So if you like the show South Park, we'll have an art exhibit of their stuff, and they're going to be talking about. It's amazing. We're announcing a bunch of musical artists actually on Monday that are going to blow people away. So we launched a couple weeks ago, and we talked about a whole music series that we have. Every night there's music at Macworld. Every night there's activities going on. So the show kind of goes from 9 in the morning until midnight every day. And so it's going to be incredible. Most evolutionary year of the show ever.
Very good. Looking forward to it, mate. Looking forward to it. The week in Apple news. We've got a packed week. We've had Lion being revealed as being only a 1.5% share of OS, as opposed to the Snow Leopard OS share, which is well up in the tens. We've got iPads Shopping on iPads has increased. We've also got the fact that Steve Jobs wanted his own wireless network. I don't think anyone's surprised by that one. And also, sandboxing is going to be enforced on March 31st. It's going to have to happen. Now, before we started, Don, I wanted to ask you about a tweet that you sent out, because you'd said you hadn't enjoyed the Steve Jobs autobiography.
Yeah, I've just finished it. I was a little bit disappointed, really, because it's mixed feelings, to be honest. I think the book is a fair depiction of Steve, and I wasn't really expecting it to glorify him or anything, but I really wanted a bit more about the business side of things. And I think it focused more on his personal life rather than on his business life. And John Syracuse did a podcast a week or two ago, and really sort of ripped the book to shreds, thinking that it was the wrong guy who actually wrote the book, because he didn't really understand the technology, and he wasn't really interested in Apple as a company. He was more looking at the sort of personal side of Steve Jobs. And in hindsight, I suppose that's probably what he wanted to do. He probably didn't want to sort of spill the beans on what goes on behind the scenes at Apple. And it was, you know, probably intended to be a more of a personal depiction of his life. But I was hoping for a bit more about the business side, and it wasn't actually there.
No. I mean, what was the big gripe then? Just the fact that the technology element, the guy wasn't a technologist.
Yeah, it's sort of the whole, you know, swathes of the book that was sort of glossed over. And, you know, there's so much gone on behind the scenes at Apple that are still a mystery to us. I sort of thought or felt that with Steve Jobs having an input, you know, with him actually having access to the guy, and he's so secretive normally, that perhaps more would have come out of it. But unfortunately, that wasn't to be.
Paul, I mean, you would have perhaps met up with Steve Jobs at times with Macworld, with Apple's presence being there and so on. I mean, have you read the book? Do you feel it was an accurate?
Yeah, I'm halfway into the book, actually. And you know, the only times that I met Steve were actually on the show floor at Macworld. It was his team that did all the planning for Macworld. Mm. And, you know, I can understand Don's perspective. But, you know, really, he chose Isaacson. And I think he wanted a book that was up there along with, you know, Isaacson, you know, wrote a portrait of Albert Einstein, right? And I think that's the character, that's what he wanted to leave behind, is kind of a more of a personal view. This wasn't a business book. It wasn't a technology book. I think it's misplaced to think it would be. And, you know, I think this is on people's bookshelves among the great inventors in the history of the world. And that's what I think the legacy that he wanted left.
Have either of you guys read it, Carl or Alex?
No. I honestly haven't read it. I don't know. There's part of me that I think I'm thinking like Don is. I don't particularly need to know all the personal things about Steve. All I care about is what I bought, what he's done for Apple, and I can see that firsthand right now. You know, there's the Pirates of Silicon Valley, that movie, which is very Hollywoodized and all that. And, you know, from what I've always known of Steve, he exactly wasn't the most easiest person to deal with or to work with. But I would prefer the technological side of Steve than more the personal side of Steve.
Alex, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just over halfway through the book, and I actually decided to stop because I wasn't ready to dislike the man, if you know what I mean. You know, he's recently gone. I mean, you're aware of my background is in psychology as well as in technology. And I got to a point where I was looking at this man through my previous life as, you know, in psychology. And I was thinking, there's a lot about this man that I'm not ready to think about, because he's just gone. And I was finding myself thinking rather uncharitable thoughts. And I thought, you know what, let the dust settle and I'll go back to it and maybe I'll have a different perspective. But I wasn't ready. It is a psychological book. It's not to do with business. It's about the man personally.
Did anyone's opinion... Sorry, Alex.
No, just saying now wasn't the right time to be thinking about him in that manner. So I've stopped halfway through.
Did anyone's opinion of Apple or anyone's opinion of Steve Jobs change as a result of reading the book? Or did it kind of reaffirm the things that you thought you understood or thought perceived anyway?
From my point of view, there were a couple of surprises. And I don't really want to give things away if people are still reading the book, etc. But I was quite surprised that, you know, we always perceive Steve Jobs to be infallible and to be forward-thinking and to be the brains and the powerhouse behind Apple. But it's quite plain in the book that there were decisions that were made that he was against that have proved to be successful and proved to have been, you know, quite revolutionary. And at the time, if we can believe what's been said in the book, he was actually against some of those things. So in some respects, it sort of, you know, it does humanize him more, but it also knocks down some of the barriers and takes away some of the misconceptions that he was this, you know, amazing business brain behind everything, all the success that they've had over the past, you know, 10 years or so. Whereas in fact, some of the decisions that he took originally that he had to be changed around to fall in line with, you know, had he stuck to his guns, you know, they mightn't have been as successful as they were. And I think that's, I don't know if that's a deliberate ploy or something that he wanted to, you know, to try and get away from this thing of everyone thinking, oh, as soon as Steve goes, Apple's going to fail. Well, you know, it's not obviously not going to be the case, but there are episodes in the book whereby it sort of shows that because he actually was going down the wrong track and other people within Apple sort of brought him back on track.
Is there an endearment that's come from reading the book towards his character? Because, I mean, Alex is talking there about the psychology of it. I mean, there's a mention from Isaacson in there that the guy's borderline Asperger's probably. But I think there's, I mean, my son's got Asperger's syndrome. So there's a kind of an element of sympathy from me towards the things that he did and the ways that he acted. And actually, in understanding more about the psychology of why Apple's done what it's done, particularly in recent months or year, you know, where the community element of Mac has certainly been destroyed. And I think that's an important point for you, Paul, because your show is very much based around the community element of Mac. And I know a lot was talked about with the withdrawal of Apple from that event, but I've seen them as trying to destroy community rather than build it. But actually, there's a lot more that's gone on in the book that's been explained that's made me think more favourably of Apple. I'm not sure they're doing it right at the moment, but at least what they're trying to do is not destroy the community of Mac.
That's kind of a complicated question. I think that your parallels to the concepts of community are one way to look at the problem. I think what most people would say who followed Apple, and I would also add, I kind of grew up in the Silicon Valley. You know, I went to high school in Palo Alto, and you know, stories and lore about Steve Jobs that kind of were around. There was this kind of mix of that he's very human, but he's very, you know, up in the ether. He's very unapproachable. And it was those two things. You know, Macworld was a perfect example of that. He would appear on stage and he would be this, you know, very connectable figure, but then you wouldn't see him for months, or you would hear of actions, or you would hear of things that he may have made decisions on that, you know, let you realize that it was Steve and it was everybody else. So I think that there's a few different ways to look at that. But with regards to community, Apple is an organization that is always looking forward. And I think that the concept of what many people refer to as the Mac community, and what I think a lot of people think are the only people that attend Macworld, iWorld, is kind of an antiquated concept. I mean, the Apple market has moved forward rapidly. You just walk by an Apple store and you look at the types of people that are in, all ages. And they're as passionate about Apple products as anyone ever has. But the concept of community, I think that a lot of people have about the Mac community, I think that's kind of an antiquated concept. There's certainly long loyal fans, but there's new loyal fans every day. And to tie it back to my own selfish purposes, that's really why we built Macworld iWorld the way we have this year, is that we wanted an event that's going to appeal to that person walking out of an Apple store for this first time on fire with the possibilities of what they could do with the products. That's why we've gone to all these cultural efforts, because the concept of a trade show and a conference, it's kind of an antiquated one, serves some people's purpose as well. But really, this overt consumerism of the Apple market right now, that's what we built the new show for. And I think that's the new essences of community. You don't go back to the old concepts of user groups as the concept. I mean, user groups are great. They serve a great purpose and they help a lot of people. But that's not the Mac community now. The Mac community is the Apple community, really, is a bigger, much more amorphous type of thing. And people touch Apple. The passion is exactly the same, I think, when people touch Apple in different ways now.
I think the one thing that it's made me realize is that the concept of Mac community was actually utterly and totally false, maybe not just even antiquated, in that Jobs, clearly from the book, wanted to create an end-to-end user experience in all of the products that they have. The closed shop, the software was written for the hardware environment, the simplicity over everything, removal of controls, removal of products and simplification of products rather than additions to them. And the Mac community, the only thing that ever compared that was important to the Mac community was the Mac community itself. And when Apple has now stepped away from the Mac community a bit because it doesn't need to do the PR with the Mac community anymore, the Mac community feels betrayed. But actually, the Mac community is kidding itself because Apple never cared about the Mac community anyway. They compared about the user experience.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I think back in the days, you know, when Apple really needed a base to try and get a message out about their position versus Microsoft, certainly in the Scully days, I think since Jobs came back in 97, there was a ramp where they realized that their fortunes were bigger than the self-described marketplace of their core. They had to come up with products that appealed to a much wider audience, and they had to come up with an approach that appealed to a much wider audience. And so from 97, you know, you saw that ramp kind of go, and it really didn't hit its stride until the iPod, right? I mean, even with the great success of the iMac, and, you know, really was kind of the first product that started taking Apple back into a different direction, to a positive direction, it was when they became a mass market company that things really started clicking for them. And I think that's when the concept of community was just, it wasn't useful to them as much anymore. But definitely in the early 90s, when things were kind of tough, late 80s, there was a community that was carrying the flag that was very, very useful and very helpful.
But that's just good PR then.
Yeah, but I would agree with that. I mean, I think that's why a lot of us are feeling the way we are right now. Apple went from the geek company, the one we loved, the one we thought was behind us and worked for us, to a consumer's electronics company. They, in effect, became Sony.
But that's what I'm saying. I think they always were that. I think the Mac community kidded itself that there was community associated from Apple. I think they just did good PR with people that like Macs, and that's it.
Well, I would challenge you there in that. At least from a marketing standpoint, Apple wanted a community. They fostered this concept of think different and you know, geniuses and these types of things. They really were trying to create that kind of counterculture, us against them, for a very long time. And now they are them. So now it's mainstream.
Don, you got anything to add?
I think you hit the nail on the head before when we talked about the Mac community, and that stems from a very small, you know, group of people who had the Macintosh computer or Mac computers. Mm. Whereas now, you know, we've got Mac and iOS, and it's an Apple community now. And it's not just the devices on our desktops, it's our portable devices. It's the back end, it's the infrastructure as well. It's all the supporting services that go around it. The whole thing, I mean, I still, with Screencast Online, you know, it's ostensibly it started off as a Mac podcast. And I still focus, you know, 80% on software that's on the Mac. But I'm always conscious of the fact that, you know, I'm getting new members who are coming in via the iPad or new members that are getting iPhones, etc. And there's a whole realm of software out there that needs to be explored for those as well. I still get the occasional pushback from people who are, you know, Mac people that don't really like me doing iOS stuff. But I think that's, you know, as we move forward, you know, the Mac community and the iOS community it's just one big Apple community, really. And, you know, you will get people who will stick with the Mac and just have a Mac. You'll get people who have a Mac, an iPhone, an iPad, and whatever devices else that, you know, they come out with. So the whole ecosystem is growing and growing and growing. And I think the community is growing in that respect as well. And that's probably, you know, one of the drivers for Paul in changing Macworld.
Absolutely.
Macworld, iWorld.
I mean, Paul's running a commercial event. Absolutely. There's no question of that. But I mean, having been around the Mac user group down in London a fair bit lately, the one thing I've noticed there is there's people that are running some seriously old OSs on seriously old hardware and are there for the Mac community and get news that they don't find particularly appealing to them, which is what you're saying, Don, a little bit with you know, Mac, pure Mac. Mm-hmm. But despite the fact that Apple's product is significantly increasing, you look at London Mac User Group, their numbers are significantly decreasing because of that community element is disappearing as it becomes more and more popular and more sellable.
Well, I think also there's more and more information out there on the web. I mean, I think it might be a problem with the user groups in that, you know, it used to be a very specialized niche area. And there wasn't much information about the Mac, so people had to get together to share the techie geeky stuff. Mm. Whereas now, you know, you've got you know podcasts like mine and video tutorials and stuff, and there's plenty of information on the web. But that still doesn't take away the fact, and the reason why I go to Macworld every year is you don't get that personal contact, and I don't even think there is a user group here in Liverpool. So I use Macworld, although I've been fortunate enough to speak there a couple of times over the past couple of years. It's the only place you can go really now where you can actually meet up with, you know, with fellow Mac heads, fellow iPhone heads, fellow iPad heads, see what's going on. But, you know, it is the, and I know we've been using community a lot. It's not just the technical sessions and the show floor. It's actually being there with your peers that I really like about Macworld, iWorld. And that's, you know, why I end up going there.
Don McAllister, right?
Pardon?
I should make the check out to Don McAllister.
A Western Union's fine, Paul. Don't worry about it.
One M, two L's. This week, we got an update. We got 5.0.0.1. beta.
No kidding.
Right, so it went well then, Kyle.
Oh, crap. No. Well, I tell you what, I mean, I don't know what it is since, you know, my cool thingy this week, we'll talk about it, but my cool thingy this week is iOS 4.3. I love the notifications. That's great. I'm all for, I love the idea of iCloud. I love all of that. But can my phone work still? I mean, that's all I'm asking, Apple. I mean, seriously, with the new update was supposed to help battery life. Really, I've had applications crash. I've had my phone stick. I can't stream quote unquote from iCloud. That stops. It's been a damn nightmare. And I hear so many. I'm hearing other things that everything's good, and I'm hearing other things that everything is bad with their update. So I don't know if I did it over the air. It's the first time, you know, that I did the over the air update. Now, I'm wondering if there's something that goes with that. If you did the over-the-air update, is this the result?
It's a conspiracy.
No kidding. Amen, brother.
Don, you had some grief.
Yeah, well, I'm not having as many problems as that, to be honest. It's purely down to battery. I mean, once the phone itself is stable and iOS 5 has been great, as far as I'm concerned, it's not really affected the phone in any way. But since getting the iPhone 4S, I have had battery problems. So when it first arrived, I had the issues with the battery. It wouldn't last a full day. You know, the charge just wouldn't last a full day. So I did this DFU restore and then restoring it from iCloud. And that fixed it for me with the original phone. That was great. And, you know, battery life was terrific. And then the 5.0.1 update came down. It actually reset my battery problems back to as they were before. So that wasn't too clever. But again, I did the DFU restore and restore it from iCloud, and it's gone back to normal again now. So I know there is a 5.0.2 update in the works because they still haven't got all the bugs out of the battery life. But other than the battery life, I have to say, I've not had no issue. Sorry, Kyle.
Paul, have you got the 4 or the 4S?
I've got a 4 and having no problems with iOS 5. When we're ready to start complaining about Lion, count me in, though.
Oh,
well, we're there.
What's happened for you, Lion, then?
Oh my gosh, I've never seen more beach balls since, you know, OS 8 probably.
Yeah.
So Lion has been really, every application seems to pause. Certain applications are quitting, you know, regularly. It's slower. Just so many things. I'm really surprised that got through QA.
Right. Okay. I mean, I've just upgraded to Lion on the video machine for the shows, and I've had a few issues and I had a couple of kernel panics, but they were my fault. They weren't Lion's. The rest of the time, it seems to be running quite well. And actually, in terms of CPU load and graphics performance, it's significantly increased the machine.
What about what about just the general interface changes? I mean, I think that's been a pretty big thing. Mail is driving me crazy right now. It's just so different. And I think, you know, maybe for someone coming in, it'd be really interesting to find out if it's more intuitive to them. But I think for many of us who have used this stuff for a long time, some of this stuff is nuts. I mean, it's just really, really hard to get your hands around. Saving files, you know, that whole paradigm is just out the window.
Yeah, I think you've got to, one thing with the save as is, I think you get bitten on the backside with that if you're desperate to do a control alt s and start command alt s and do a save as, that's when it makes you realize I can't do that anymore. If you open a file for the first time and you realize that you're not going to do a save as on it, then it's different. It's when you open existing files that you then realize that you've got this problem. And the way to get around it is to duplicate them and save them as templates if that's really what you really want to do.
But it's not intuitive what duplicating is and, you know, what the process is,
exactly.
Manage your file. Yeah. So it's out there.
Yeah.
Especially a save a version as well, which confuses people because they think, I'm going to save a version. right, where's it gone? But literally, you are saving a version within versions. You're not saving a version of the document. So that trips people.
It's not a save as, again,
It's not a save as.
I thought Don said something else.
Hey, save a virgin.
Yeah, that's what I thought he said.
Mac man. Now, of course, if you're struggling with Lion, there is always an awful lot of resources out there to help you with it, isn't there, Don?
I'm not saying anything.
No, come on, mate. That was just cue to give a plug. I'm offering you. Come on.
Oh, go on then. The SEO Tutor for Lion application on the Mac App Store is doing really well, actually. It's getting quite a few sales. I've got some great reviews. I've had over 90 reviews now. It's been out 4 weeks, and I've had over 90 four-star reviews. Is it four or five? So what's the top? Five-star
reviews. Five, yeah.
Yeah, throughout the world. So that's really good. So I'm very pleased with that. I'll send you a copy, Paul, so you can download it from the Mac App Store. But it's basically a 2.5-hour tutorial all about Lion. It goes into in-depth about the the save as stuff and all that sort of caper. But it's going really well. Very pleased with it.
Yeah, very good, you see. There's no problem in plugging yourself, mate. So it's the only reason Paul's here. Based on the debacle at the start, he's not coming again till next year. Stay well away from this podcast, dude. Now, Alex, you've got a 4, not a 4S, haven't you? Same as me.
Yeah, I got a 4.
And I've had no battery life either. Problems.
Mm. Well, I'm going to be polite because I think the 4 has done as much to my phone as Lion has done to my computer. It's completely buggered it up. I mean, for instance, I haven't really used my phone today and I'm on 58% and I took it off charge 4 hours ago.
But you've applied the 0.1 update.
Yeah, exactly. No problem whatsoever beforehand.
Right. Now, I haven't. I haven't applied the 5.01 update and I'm fine and dandy.
Yeah, well, I was fine and dandy. That's one of the funny things about over-the-air update. I think I put it on because I think my computer said it was plugged in or something. And I thought, oh, it's an over-the-air update. I'll do that because it's new. And I don't think I would have bothered updating it otherwise. So it's the fact that it had the new technology. I thought, I'll give that a go. That'll be a laugh, which is why I'm in trouble now. So, but it's still better than Lion.
Oh, we're all agreed on that one then.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
To say I'm thankful I'm not alone.
Google Music hit the streets yesterday. Now, we're in the UK, so obviously we can't get that because we can't get iTunes Match either, Paul. You're the only person here who can get both of those. Is Google Music any kind of threat to iTunes or not?
I don't know enough about Google Music yet. I've been kind of watching the feeds, and you know, there are a lot of people who are trying it. I guess evidently there are a couple of different angles to music management through Google Music. I know I spend a lot of time with iTunes Match this week, and that's another one, you know, kind of like Lion, a lot of really strange things about iTunes Match. Songs that some things get uploaded, some things get matched that you wouldn't expect. If your tags are not set straight, it really creates a problem for your library. I had a nice clean library on my iDevices, and now that everything's matched, I have a bunch of no album cover, and it's not pirated music, it's ripped music, but there's like a lot of stuff that just isn't there, and so it's kind of a mess. And you know, when you don't have a great connection available, you've got this long library of stuff you can't listen to, and you know, it's a little weird. I think there's still some bugs and process to work out for that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I thought I had a very good iTunes library, same as you. I've got a lot of songs, but they're all ripped from CDs, and there's a few that are downloaded, but you know, legitimately. And I ran Cover Scout because I'd missed the cover art on quite a lot of them. I thought, well, this is going to run pretty well because it knows what it are. It's got the track names, that kind of stuff. The crap that Cover Scout came back with was unbelievable. I mean, I'd got the Prodigy had come down and it had got a Glenn Miller cover art for it. You know, it was that far out in terms of musical tastes as well as, and it was all because of tagging. And it just doesn't, if you're then pushing your complete collection up to a service which is heavily reliant on tags, you really are taking your life in your hands. And Google Music's doing the same kind of things.
Glenn Miller, Fat of the Land.
Yeah, Google Music's slightly different, isn't it? Because you have to upload your music to Google Music. They're not doing a...
But they're doing a match-like service as well, though, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah. $25 a year, same thing. Yeah, and they're also doing an artist's page for $25. So if you're a musician, you can create your own shop front for $25. Stick any music in there that you want to sell and set your own prices and just take 70% of total sale price. Very, very good. I thought that was amazing.
Mm. I'd actually like Match to actually include a tune-up or cover scout type of service. I think that's essential.
Mm. But how well would it work? That's the point, you know, because it's clearly running amok with yours, and it ran amok with mine in terms of Cover Scout. It was awful.
Yeah, they would have to improve it.
I had problems too. I mean, I was importing, these were both CDs also too. I was importing an Oasis album, Morning Glory, with Wonderwall on it, and I imported a live album from Oasis, and it didn't accept the live album. It only transferred over the one track from the album. So I noticed that if the title's the same, and if you got a live cut of that or whatever, and even if it's legitimate or what have you, hopefully it's legitimate. It's not seeing that. It's only seeing whatever you first put into your library.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Go ahead, Alex.
So it's definitely getting a lot worse. I got back a load of CDs recently that I'd completely forgotten about, and I thought, I'll rip them just because I won't go through the whole out library because I just haven't got life. My life's not long enough. But there was only like 10 albums. I thought, well, I'll rip these, and I think one of them it picked up the album art for, and funny enough, it was a live album that there was a very limited edition, and I didn't think it had a chance on that. And it was the only one it picked up the album art. And I did a couple of searches. I tried to force it a couple of times, and I ended up dropping my own album art onto it. And funnily enough, next time I turned it on, half the album art that I dropped on has disappeared as well. So something is going on. Older albums, I put on some original Simon & Garfunkel albums. Not of course that I would own such a thing, but I just so happened to have them, and it didn't pick up those. And they must be multi-million-pound selling CDs and multi-million selling CDs, and it just didn't pick them up. And I've got now used to just dropping my own album art on, because I do a Google search at the same time as I do the ripping now, because it's just not working anymore.
Yeah, but one of my biggest beefs is after doing Match. If you go to Artist View on your iPad, there'll be like a blank album cover representing that artist. Yet within, if you click down one more level, there are actually album covers that it can use. I don't understand why that happens.
Yeah, no. I mean, one of the things again that came through from the Steve Jobs biography is how he wanted this usability, because all of the other services, Music Match and those kind of things, didn't do a good user experience for finding the music in the first place. And it strikes me that actually that's coming back now, almost by design, if you like. The new products that are coming out there making it harder and harder and harder to find what you want, because the visual aspects are disappearing, the tagging's not good, and all of those things aren't making it very easy. You've got to almost go through and manually reconstruct your library.
Yeah, quite often you'll notice if you put in one album, you'll get quite a lot of different tags for the, I don't know what you call it, the type of music within one album.
Mm.
Now, maybe one track might be slightly more bluesy than another track, but in general, that sort of artist to be what you want when you go to look for, say, blues or jazz or whatever it is. But you can have such different tagging within the same album, according to iTunes, that you'll never hear half that album if you're looking for a mood.
Mm.
And that's changed as well. It never used to be quite so ambiguous, but it is now.
Apple are to replace the first gen iPods if you bought one of those and you've got it kicking around somewhere, and I've got three somewhere in the house. I need to find them, but if you can find them, they're going to replace them because there's been a bit of a fire risk on the batteries. Anyone got one kicking around, or have you all gazelled it?
No, I've got two.
Two, get it in, dude, because apparently you sent it in at the start of the week, and apparently some of the replacements have already started appearing.
That's great.
It's the Nano, isn't it?
Yeah, you get a brand new Nano.
I know.
But I did have one, but it burnt down with my shed. I don't know what happened.
No, apparently it's the Gen 1 only, and it's not batch related, although there is a bad batch of batteries. They don't know which one they went in, so they're taking them all back in. Anyone that's got one, you'll get a brand new iPod Nano.
What was that first gen? Was it five meg?
5 gig.
5 gig.
5 gig.
Yeah.
5 gig.
First got iPod Nano.
That was the start of my financial
enslavement to Apple.
Yeah, that was it.
In the closed shop with the lenses.
Mm. It's an interesting question. When they brought out the iPod to go with the iTunes, do you think people bought more music than they would have done otherwise? Do you think it encouraged people to buy music?
Absolutely. I think it was that was part of the deal that I think Apple was able to get the labels to start working with them, is that they were going to start attacking Napster.
Right. So, you know, it did an awful lot of good for the very people that have done the most complaining about it.
Well, it's because, you know, the reason why that is, Alex, is because Steve knew how to get a deal. He got the best deal for their company. The record industry, okay, yeah, sounds good, and signed on the dotted line. I mean, really, Apple, they got the better end of the stick on this, for sure. But I agree with that. I think it's encouraged people to go and buy music. And let's face it, at a time, I think we're, as a society, we're a little more educated now. But at that time, you thought, I got an iPod, met iTunes, met Apple, oh, I've got to have all of this. Well, you never really needed to in the first place. But that was the concept, that you bought this, you had to go to iTunes, you had to buy the music, you had to put it on your iPod. As simple as that.
Does anybody remember when iTunes was introduced at Macworld, that one of the lines that Steve used was, when he was talking about a 99-cent song price, about how much less than a latte it was?
Yeah, that's right. It was going to cut a latte from Starbucks was three times that.
Right.
And something about ripping your own songs and putting them on, if you worked out how long it took, you were working for less than the minimum wage. Yeah, isn't that right?
The price of coffee has gone up dramatically since then.
Well, I think the other point that was made...
The price of songs have gone up since then.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe that's what they balance. They don't balance it against the dollar. They balance it against the cocoa bean.
I think the other thing that's important about that is that the one of the things that was made when the iPod was launched was the fact that people didn't want to steal it. They just had no choice. Mm. And that was the key part. And unfortunately, the music industry dragged its heels for so long that the stealing it became an ingrained action. And that's what their hard part now is to get away. You know, they're trying to remove habit rather than deal with it. Mm. This podcast would not be possible without Bagel Tech. Bagel Tech News wouldn't be possible. Start again.
Without bagels.
I didn't want to do any editing this week, no. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the morons that deliver it. From UK2. They're the best people in the world. They look after us. They give us all the bandwidth. They pick up all the hosting charges for everything, all the domains that we've got. And they are stunning. So you can support them, then you're going to support us. Go to bageltechnews.com, scroll down on the left-hand side, and you'll see a UK2 logo. Click on that. There's a tracking link. Even if you just want to sign in to your account, just do it through that route, and they're very happy about that. They want to know about returning customers. And then here's the best bit. If you buy a domain or you buy any of the hosting services or anything like that, then all you've got to do is type in Bagel Tech as your offer code, all one word, and you get 15% off your basket. If you're transferring domain in, there's a thing called the DNS management charge, which they have as well, but Bagel Tech listeners don't have to pay that. So all you have to do is use in Bagel DNS as your offer code, and that wipes out the DNS management charge. So use both codes as well. You don't have to just use one or the other. Both will work. The other thing is, if you entered our Nintendo giveaway, then they sent you a voucher code for 25% off. Should have entered. There you go. Bad luck. UK2.net, support them. You support us. Thank you ever so much for your support for them, and thank ever so much to them for keeping us afloat, because since we've been doing video, we've taken a lot of bandwidth. It's fair. Right. Have we got any cool things? Don, have you got a cool thingy for us?
I'll start off with a cool thingy. It's a web service, but you can run it on a mobile browser on your iPhone or any device. What it is, it links into Spotify. It's called Spartify.
Oh, I picked this last night.
Did you?
On the big show, yes. That's serendipity for you.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, can I do it on this one?
Yes, no, it's awesome.
Right. So basically, on the Mac where you have your Spotify installed, you open a browser session, you go to Spartify.com. It's free, and you start a party. And basically what that will do is it will open up your Spotify list, and you can then start searching for songs within Spotify, and it will start playing them. But then the nice thing is, someone else can come along onto your local Wi-Fi network, go to Spotify.com, you give them the code that is generated when you start a party, and then they can log into the same service, and they can then start searching for songs and adding them to the queue. And then, you know, once you get more people going, they can all go in, you can start voting songs. I think, I'm not sure if you can vote them down, but you can certainly vote them up. You know, if there's songs in the playlist that you want moving to the top, you can just tap on a button and it moves it to the top. It's really neat, very, very simple, and it's there's no app required. It's all done via the mobile web browser, and I think it's a really neat idea.
Excellent. Spartify. And you'll know it when you get there because there's a picture of Gerard Butler for This Is Sparta grafted onto some bloke's face. There we go. Excellent pick, mate. Kyle, your pick, please.
My pick is called iHeart Radio. It's a thing I used in the past, and then I kind of dumped it off the iPhone a long time ago because it kept crashing and everything. And then with iCloud, I remembered I got it, so I reinstalled it this week, and it gives you access to U.S. radio stations. I'm not sure if you need a U.S. account to do that or not, because my account is still tied with my iTunes in the U.S. So, which is possible, but. You can get talk shows on there. It's basically Clear Channel radio stations across the U.S. is really what you can get. I think it's also in cooperation with AOL Radio and maybe a few others. I downloaded it this week simply because I'm wanting to listen to sports talk news, what's going on with the NBA, lockout and all this stuff, and get a talk show sports talk view of it from the U.S. point of view. So, but yeah, it works great, streams great, sounds great. It's great to use it with the dock, and you can plug it in, speakers or your home stereo system. You can stream the radio station right through there.
And it's free, you cheap bastard.
Yeah, right on. It's free until the NBA is out of their lockout.
So they're doing very well. They actually, iHeartRadio just held a huge music conference out in Las Vegas, and a lot of great bands, and it was a pretty interesting thing. Very well received.
I'm just trying to figure out whether this works in the UK or not. Oh, I he's got the volume up. There we go. Whether it works in the UK or not. I'm sure it does. Surely. Yes, because Sarah picked it on the big show, she says. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Alex, have you got anything? Because we did kind of jump on you today.
Yeah, well, in the realms of everybody copying everybody else's picks.
Good lad.
What I'm going to do is... I've been sitting there on Twitter, and Kyle has given me a great pick. So this one's dedicated to Kyle, the Claw 10101, who does all our bookings. Right, it's called Zite, Z-I-T-E, and it's an app for the iPad. And we did have a chat about it the other night, so I do know a little bit about it. It's like a magazine app, but what you do with it, you tell it what subjects you're interested in, and it allows RSS feeds in every hour on only those subjects. But when those subjects come in, you give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And what happens, it then learns what you like. So in other words, it's like building up your own magazine with your own preferences. And over time, it learns a bit more. So you're only going to get articles on subjects and things that you're really interested. So it's a free
TiVo.
App. It's TiVo. And it... TiVo for magazines.
Yeah.
But it sifts out all the crap.
Very good.
I mean, he was really lauding it. And, to give him his dues, I think he may have picked a good one.
Was this at the Mac, the Elmug event?
I think he may have spoken about it somewhere else. But, as our listenership is far greater than a room full of people in a pub, I thought I'd expand his horizons slightly and broadcast it to the world.
Apparently, he got a blue screen of death. At a Mac event. No.
He broke it. Ooh. He broke Elmug.
Oh, Carl. We love you to bits. You do all the show bookings. We think you're fantastic. But, dude, blue screen of death at a Mac event. You've got to have a spinning beach ball at least.
Lies.
Lies. Yeah, righto, mate. I like the logo as well on that site. Looks good. I think that's sexy. Well done. Paul, now I said we do a cool thing, and you've been tapping away furiously there, so I'm guessing you've been looking for something.
No, I have something, and I just wanted to get a URL. So my cool thing is a YouTube video, and the reason this is really kind of cool, I just put it into the chat room, is it's a YouTube video by a band called Atomic Tom, who this is a live performance on a New York subway train of a hard rock band performing a song using only iPhones for instrumentation. The singer sings into an iPhone. The drummer taps out a beat. The guitar player taps out a guitar part. It's awesome. And the awesome thing, watch how clever this is. The awesome thing is Atomic Tom is going to perform at Macworld and be at Macworld. And so let's see how the whole thing kind of ties in together.
Atomic Tom.
That's the band name. Check out the YouTube video. It's a live performance. It's the real deal. Of a hard rock band performing an entire song using only iPhones.
Take Me Out Subway, I think's the track, isn't it?
That's it.
Yeah, okay.
Take Me Out is a song.
Yeah, yeah. And Subway is the... If you put in Atomic Tom, Take Me Out Subway into YouTube, you'll find it. There we go. We'll stick that in the show notes, mate, so everyone can have a go at it. Brilliant. My pick... My cool thing is thanks to Robert Falk, Streak Machine, on Twitter. And I was just sitting musing one night, and periodically I'll get these thoughts in my head about, I wonder what happened to, and it'll be like Space Invaders, Donkey Kong, you know, those kind of things. And I thought to myself, I wonder what happened to Transport Tycoon, because I used to love playing that. So I just tweeted out and said, anyone know anything about Transport Tycoon? 3 minutes later, Robert comes back with a link to Transport Tycoon for the Mac. And it's basically OTT, and it's that's it. OTT, I'll get the link in a second, but it's superb. It is absolutely stunning. It is exactly as I remember Transport Tycoon, and it's beautiful. OpenTTD, that's it, openttt.org. And you can get Transport Tycoon there, and there's a few little bit of quirks that you have to do, like download AIs from other people that have developed it since, and a few of the other things like buildings and cars and vans and that kind of stuff you've got to get down through additional downloads. But it runs smooth as silk. It looks absolutely super gorgeous when you play it. And I've run it on the 30-inch screen, and it's fantastic. You can actually see the whole island and things like that. And I've got sod all done this week. Absolutely bugger all that I'm supposed to do, because it's that good. So there you go. Transport Tycoon for the Mac, finally. Love it to bits.
Free?
Yeah, it's free. It's open source.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Where can we get a hold of you, Don?
Well, you can find me over at screencastonline.com. But since you started me off on some gratuitous self-promotion, I've just remembered the SEO Tutor for Lion app is, it only runs on Lion. So, and it was intended for people who were already using Lion to learn more about Lion, but I've had lots of people saying, I haven't got Lion yet, but I'd like to see it, to see what it's all about and to see what new features there are in Lion. Now, unfortunately, the app will only work online. So what I've done is I've extracted the video and made a separate download of just the video. I'm still charging people because it's members' content. So if they go across to screencastonline.com/MAS, which is for Mac App Store, there's a little link on there now for video-only download, and that'll take you through to a page whereby you can read about just the video and just download the video separately. So that's the end of my gratuitous...
Do you pay for that, or is that part of your membership?
No, members have already got the content because it's episodes I've published before. So this is for someone who's perhaps doesn't want a full membership, but they still want to see what the video looks like. They can download it from that page.
So you'll have to go there, Paul, because you're not, or you are running Lion, just hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. I've already sent Paul a promo code, so he's sorted.
Good man. Good man. Cool. Thank you.
I've known him for years and I've never had a promo code.
We've all got complimentary memberships, mate. Yes. What are you talking about?
I haven't.
I did. I got one. Thank you
very much. I'm not getting into this now. I'm too hurt.
No, I got a renewal notice and Don just picked it up and said, no worries. I'm well chuffed.
Double the charge. Right.
No.
I'm only pulling your leg, mate.
All right.
Kyle, where can we get hold of you, pal?
You can find me on Twitter at Kyle Swagger. You can also find me at kyleswagger.com. And if anybody needs any voiceover talent work done, please hit me up. I need it.
Now, funny you should mention voiceover talent work, because next week on the big show, we've got a really special guest. We've got John Briggs, who's the voice of Siri in the UK. He's coming on the big show.
Cool.
And apparently, this is the weird part, he used to be a tech journalist before he got into doing voiceovers. So he's perfectly placed to come and give us some awesome tech advice as well as. So there you go.
Well, do hope he doesn't know too much.
You'll have to come on the big show, Carl, next week and trade voices with him. It'll be like Julian Banjos. But
we got to make him say some stuff, you know, that, you know, for like ringtones.
Oh, no, I've already asked him if he'll do some Welcome to Bagel Tech Cues in the Siri voice and stuff. So there you go.
Sweet.
Alex, where can we get you, pal?
You can get me at Alex G Fox on Twitter. And please feel free to write some questions into Bagel Tech Photo, because we were running short today and we need some more questions.
No, we get loads. Today I didn't get a chance to put any up, that's why. And they just happened to be two that I found and cut and pasted. Don't worry about it.
Okay, don't bother writing.
No, still writing with your questions, but we're not running short. Just keep coming, the questions coming. And Paul, now then, mate, you're on here because you're the man from Macworld. So tell us about Macworld, pal.
Well, so first, macworldiworld.com is the URL for the new show. I'm on Twitter at Paul Kent. I always love to hear from people what they'd like to see happen at the show. I'd love to hear from people as to how they're enjoying the show. We really try to build this thing to be, we call it the ultimate iFan event. And so if people really enjoy this technology and they want to come to some place where they can see what people are doing with it, you know, shop for new things, check out new products, take some classes, or as Don mentioned, one of the great values of what Macworld iWorld offers is there's something different that happens face to face. It's just, It's not that training isn't great online. You know, Don's stuff is incredibly valuable. It's a different forum for exchanging information that still has value in the world. We all live online most of the time. Getting together with other human beings every once in a while still has incredible value. And it's a different environment. And like I said, this year we've got amazing bands. We've got a film festival. We've got fantastic works of Apple inspired art. We've got over 75 tech talks covering a lot of these lion things that we were talking about iOS, some of the, you know, most important apps, helping people discover cool apps. So it's really a lot of fun. It's three intense days of everything Apple.
Excellent. Good man. And I really want to come out. When's the dates for everyone?
January 26th to 28th out in San Francisco, California.
Oh, we'll have to give us a bagel tech stand. How much is that going to cost?
We'll figure it out.
We'll be back again.
Western Union.
Western Union. PayPal. Yeah. We'll be back again next week with the Mac Show as normal. Everyone else will be joining us again. And Mr. Inatco's coming back for his regular monthly appearance. So he'll be here. Join us in the chat room. Ask any questions you want. And we'll go through the Mac news if they bother to give us any, rather than just the rumours and the usual crap that's out there. Have a great weekend. Start to you. See you next time. Woohoo! Oh, aye. Paul couldn't stay then.
Oh,
no.
He probably wondered why we'd all gone quiet.
Yeah, I should have warned him.
Those bastards. Those English bastards.
Hey, not all of us are English.
I just want to bring you back and say, no, we weren't being arseholes.